A program that can only be as true as life itself.
Today's program is about the disease of drunkenness. You may be surprised to hear the person who tells the story. She says,
I was picked up for weaving, drunken driving. And I promptly offered the cop a drink and invited him to breakfast. But he took us, instead of coming over to breakfast, he took me down to the jail. And they put me in a very charming peach-colored cell. I promptly went to sleep without telling my name or anything about it. And one reason why I had refused to give my name is because I didn't want to disturb my children. They were home. So, finally, I came to and realized the spot I was in and discovered that I would have to pay a $3,000 property bond, or somebody would have to sign one for me before I could get out.
It's Your Life is brought to you by Johnson & Johnson, makers of surgical dressings and Johnson's baby products, serving the medical profession in the homes of America since 1886. This is the program that brings you real people, telling the inspiring stories of their own victories over life's real problems. Your friends and neighbors tell the stories in their own words by means of transcribed tape recordings. Now here's our producer, Ben Park, to continue with today's program.
Today, the second of two programs on alcoholism. Yesterday, you heard how a young person could become addicted to alcohol just as easily as someone nearing middle age. Our story was told by a young man. Today, we hear from a woman, a mother and a grandmother. Her story needs no explanations. It will tell itself. Reporter Don Herbert is ready to bring you the story with his tape recorder. And as it begins, the woman has just started to tell us.
I drank a great deal because of Prohibition. I think really my drinking started, when Prohibition came in, after I was married. I never drank very much before that.
Mm-hmm.
Never cared particularly about drinking. But during Prohibition, it was the thing to do, and I never was one to turn down a new thing, and I went into it with my heart and soul and no ill effects whatever. In fact, I did very well with it. And it wasn't until Prohibition was repealed. Then I found that I would have to drink because there was a lot of liquor that I'd never tasted. I hadn't started soon enough, and couldn't get it during Prohibition. And I felt that I'd missed a great deal, so I must drink and sample all good liquor that I could get a hold of. And about that time, I began relaxing very frequently. It began with every weekend. Then during the week, there would have to be a few drinks, or if there was any special job I had to do that seemed a little bit difficult, then I naturally could use a drink or two to get me over the hump. Or if I accomplished an awfully good job, naturally I had to celebrate a little bit. And so pretty soon, it began to be a problem. My husband didn't care for the way I was drinking. And I felt that was very unfair, since it seemed to me that he was drinking just as much as I was. So it made rather a rift, and he was out of town a great deal. And so I took to drinking when he wasn't at home. It got to the point where I never drank alone at home, but I might have a couple of drinks, and then I would head where I thought the bright lights would be, or where a lone woman could go. Of course, there are not very many respectable bars where a woman is welcome if she's drinking alone. So I usually started at the Newberry Library on Clark Street and made every spot down to the river on one side of the street and then started back up the other side of the street. And I, strangely enough, would sometimes drive home that time a matter of 35 miles, and I would never know how I got home. And finally, it occurred to me that I couldn't stop drinking.
You remember the day this occurred to you?
No, I can't give you exactly the day, but it was about a month before a very serious thing happened to me.
We're hearing a story about alcoholism, a disease which doesn't attack just middle-aged men, but something which may occur early or late in life to either men or women. Today, our story is told by a lady who is approaching middle age. Up to now, she's told us how she started to drink and about some of the good times she had. Now the scene changes. We go back to her story and hear about a very eventful day in her life.
I started out about 6 a.m. with the 2 women and 1 man in their car, following me with 1 of the men in my car. And along about Highland Park on Skokie, I don't know just where it was, I was picked up for weaving, drunken driving. And I promptly offered the cop a drink and invited him to breakfast. But he took us, instead of coming over to breakfast, he took me down to the jail. And they put me in a very charming peach-colored cell. And I promptly went to sleep without telling my name or anything about it. And one reason why I had refused to give my name is because I didn't want to disturb my children. They were home. So, finally, I came to and realized the spot I was in and discovered that I would have to pay a $3,000 property bond, or somebody would have to sign one for me before I could get out. And I didn't know what to do. I really didn't. So I finally called my daughter and told her where I was and to please call this friend of mine, of ours, and ask him if he would sign this bond. My daughter and a friend came over to get me. Well, I knew that probably this friend who had put up the bond and my husband would go to the judge and tell him that I'd been ill, which was partially true. Really, probably more true than I knew. But I thought I'd better make it good. So when they brought me in from the peach-colored cell to escort me home, I fainted. Because then I knew the police captain would be a witness that I was not well, and scared them all to death. And then I was really disturbed. And the consensus of opinion was that I was an alcoholic. Well, I didn't believe it. And my main feeling was, so I'm an alcoholic. Then what happens? What do I do? And I couldn't believe, of course, that the time had arrived when I couldn't handle liquor. But I felt also that they couldn't possibly understand what tremendous reasons I had for drinking. Then I wouldn't discuss the matter, of course, with them. I wouldn't think of discussing it. And I used every means possible I chewed parsley. Somebody told me if you chewed parsley that you couldn't smell liquor. So I did that, and I would develop a toothache that would require a half a bottle of oil of cloves and all the tricks that every alcoholic does. And I would hide bottles. I had them tucked all over Lake County under various logs and places where I would go out in the car. And I had had such bad hangovers that I had had to call doctors, which had never happened to me before. And I was beginning to feel that I was either losing my mind or that I had gotten to such a stage that I was utterly unacceptable to anybody, though I seemed to still have a few friends.
She asked the question herself. She said, so I'm an alcoholic. What do I do about it? And so far in her story, that question hasn't been answered. But there is an answer, or we wouldn't be telling her story. So once again, we turn on the microphones to catch her voice as she says,
and finally, I went to a friend of mine said that she knew a man who had been a terrific drunk, and a man who held a very responsible position, a very intelligent man, and he said that if I would call him and have lunch with him, that he would be very glad to talk to me about Alcoholics Anonymous. So I went to see him. I had one of the most arresting conversations that I had ever encountered in my life. That man knew what he was talking about, and he knew all about me. But I was still putting out. I was still giving him all the reasons why I liked to drink. I wanted to drink.
Mm-hmm.
It was necessary that I drink. But I had to convince myself, first of all, that I wanted to stop drinking. And I was convinced that I didn't. I wasn't even sure that I was an alcoholic, and it was only by going to meetings and listening to other alcoholics talk and realizing that in each one, no matter how different his experience and story was, there was one point where it fitted me, where that I had in common with everybody I listened to. Someplace along the line, his experience had been mine. So it finally dawned on me that two things equal to each other, to a third, are equal to each other, for how the story goes, and that I must be an alcoholic. I decided that I was through and that I wanted to stop drinking, and I would give Alcoholics Anonymous a chance. I would cooperate as well as I possibly could and see what happened. That is over 3 years ago. I've had not even a desire to drink. I've thought of it many times, but I truly don't want to drink.
How has this affected you personally, as far as your outlook on life and your health and so forth?
Well, I can't believe that I'm the same person. I can't believe, as I look back, that it could have been I who did all the things that I, and thought all the things that I did during my drinking period. I have the it's what we call in AA complete change of personality, if I've ever seen it. My children are also like different people. It has affected my whole environment, and it affects every alcoholic's whole environment.
What do you think when you're coming home from the loop and driving out and you go down Clark Street and see all those places?
Well, I wish that I could reach them so they would know what a different point of view could mean to them. And the freedom that comes by admitting that you're licked and you don't have to do it alone, the freedom that comes with that. If nothing else in the world had happened to me, that freedom's enough.
Next week, we're going to bring you a series of real stories of real life told by people whom Father Time just can't seem to catch up with. I'll be back in a moment to tell you more about that, but right now, here's a most important message from Tony Parrish.
The recently formed Chicago Committee on Alcoholism attempts to coordinate Chicago's available medical and social welfare facilities to combat alcoholism. If you have an alcohol problem in your home, we urge you to contact the Chicago Committee on Alcoholism at its treatment center, Portal House. Portal House is Chicago's only non-profit alcoholic treatment center. The phone number is Wagner 40700. A call to that number may mean new life to someone dear to you who suffers from the disease of alcoholism. That phone number again, Wagner 40700. Friends, there are many things we can do to safeguard our family's health. One of them is to keep our homes supplied with medical necessities at all times. For instance, Johnson & Johnson sterile gauze pads, adhesive bandage, Red Cross cotton and Red Cross gauze bandage. All made exclusively by Johnson & Johnson, serving the medical profession in the homes of America since 1886. Red Cross cotton and bandage have no connection with the American National Red Cross. Now here's Ben Park with a word about next week's programs.
Somewhere, somehow, someone got the idea that people should quit working, quit playing, and actually quit living as soon as they reach the age of 65. A lot of people today are living 10, 20, 25 years after that. Many of them don't want to quit. All of them have to live. It's a problem, and one whose answers are alternately pathetic and hilarious. Next week, we'll hear some gay and touching human stories about life and all that it really can and should hold after 65.
It's Your Life is reviewed by a committee of health and medical authorities. Produced by the Chicago Industrial Health Association and sponsored by Johnson & Johnson, the most trusted name in surgical dressings. The radio series is supervised by Ben Park. Don Herbert is heard as the on-the-spot interviewer. The programs are presented in transcribed tape recording. This is Tony Parrish, reminding you not to get too far away from your radio at 11:15 a.m. Monday through Friday, because that's the time to tune in for It's Your Life.